The lights are on red. We're away.
GPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, August 10th, and this is show number 90. We're the big 90 now. It's kind of cool. I am Bob Hayes, your host here this week, as I am every week, to tell you about the latest and greatest in MotoGP and other forms of motorcycle road racing. So we got a pretty cool show going on this week. Jules Cisek, a.k.a. Pop Monkey, occasional guest host and frequent guest on the show, and MotoGPOD friend and all that, lives down in the Bay Area, and Liam Schubert, also a frequent guest and friend of MotoGPOD, and as you'll recall, parts manager for the Dantin Pramac Ducati racing team in MotoGP. They've been visiting down there because Liam has been spending some time during the summer break down there in the Bay Area visiting friends and all of that, and Liam's down there, so they've been hanging out here and there, and they did a recording of the conversation they had just chatting about MotoGP, kind of the usual thing where you get Liam talking, and Liam's always great for information, so we've got that coming up. That's a really cool thing. We're going to touch on some of the news that happened the past week and a few other things. It seems like a pretty good show overall. First off, before we get into the whole show thing, I want to mention Tyler Weingartner's photos. He, when he was at Laguna Seca, and we had some postings going in on RideOn2.com, and Jules had taken a whole bunch of pictures, and he started posting them on RideOn2, and Tyler, who I'd exchanged some emails before in the past with his MotoGPOD, he had taken some photos too, and he posted some up there, and it's just like, wow, these are great shots. How'd you get them? It turns out that Tyler had press pass from the Repsol USA distributor. He was like their official photographer there, and he was working these press credentials for all he was worth. He got some great shots. He's got them all up on his website, and I'm going to put the full link on the MotoGPOD website, but the short version is TylerWeingartner.com. You could probably find it from there, but the easiest thing is going to be just go to the MotoGPOD website and find the link. It's Tyler Weingartner, and I'll put the link there for his Laguna Seca photos. Some just fantastic shots that Tyler got. I mean, these are just knock your socks off shots. You got to check them out. And also, of course, check out Jules' photos. I will put a link up there for them as well. Again, Jules also got some fantastic knock your socks off photos. I mean, you put a giant lens on these cameras and get a guy with some talent behind the camera, and it's amazing what they can come up with. I'm extremely jealous because my photography skills are extremely limited, and I can only look on with envy at what these guys can do with a camera. So we got that going on. Then let's see some other stuff. Oh, a cool thing I noticed while I was sort of perusing my web server logs and stuff. I do this occasionally every now and then, kind of check the logs, see what's going on. And I was seeing where the referrers, where people come to MotoGPOD.com, where are they coming from? So I noticed that BikeMe.tv, which I mentioned last week when we had our Mark Brax interview, because Mark writes for BikeMe.tv, and I noticed quite a few referrals coming through from the BikeMe forums there and BikeMe.tv. They were nice enough to give me a link, so I encourage you to do the same. You know, go back to them, and you can click through if you'd like from MotoGPOD.com, the BikeMe.tv, but they've got a great forum going on there with a definite Australian flavor. It's real interesting stuff. These guys have a serious sense of humor, so if you want to participate in their forum, they'd be glad to have you. I think they'd like to get a little international sort of readership and participation going on, so it's well worth a listen. One of the things that they posted, luckily translated for me, a comment that Mark had made during the interview. And basically, Mark, when he was talking about the Indy track, he said that it was flatter than a shit Carter's hat. And I have to admit, when I was on the phone with Mark and he said this, and he sort of said something like, you know, pardon my French or something along those lines. And he said something that I had no idea what he said. I could not understand a word of it. I mean, the phone quality was so-so on that call with Mark and his accent and everything else. I'm just like, yeah, sure, whatever, you know, and I kind of moved on. Then when I'm editing the show, I listened to it like five times and I could still, you know, I knew what he was talking about, that it was flat. Other than that, I had no idea. So fortunately, I found the translation there on on bikeme.tv. Having never seen a shit carter's hat, I have no idea what it looks like, but I'm assuming it's quite flat. So if you were puzzled by that comment from Mark Brax, then there's your translation for you, and I hope that helped a lot. And you can find that and many more Australian translations on the bikeme.tv forums. So I encourage you to take a look at that. And another one, while I'm talking about referrals and on the website and all this sort of thing, I found a posting on an English website, ZXRworld.co.uk. That's ZXR World for us in the United States.co.uk. And they have a forum going on there about Kawasaki's and ZXR 400 Owners Club, it is. And somebody very kindly posted to MotoGPOD.com, and he says, unlike here in Europe, in the States, they let people wander around the paddock willy-nilly, and Bob seizes the opportunity to podbush, a new phrase, everyone that he can. And then he says, the crazy Americans drove 900 miles from Oregon to be there, and it made me chuckle when he says that gas is expensive before adding that it's $3 a gallon, which, yes, comparatively to the UK, where it's, what, something like, you know, $8 a gallon. I think you guys are paying about a pound a liter, right? Yes, we are getting off quite lightly, but it has gone up quite quickly over here from about $2 a gallon to $3 a gallon in about a year, so it's all relative. Everything's relative. Whatever, that was posted by Gubbs, who I don't know your real name, but I appreciate the shout out there. I noticed some links coming in. So this is enough about people posting stuff in the forums, although I do thank you very much for all that. It's good stuff. And while we're on the thank yous, I want to thank Kevin Whitaker for his very kind donation to the cause of MotoGPOD. Appreciate that. Thanks a lot, Kevin. And one more thank you goes out to Chris Johnham, the editor of Road Racer X magazine, who gave me a little shout out in his last online column that he does called Road Racer Head, which you can find at the roadracerx.com website. It's called Road Racer Head. It comes out every Friday. It's a great column that Chris puts out. And he's mentioned MotoGPOD several times in his column, and I always get, you know, quite a bit of activity coming from there, and I always appreciate it. And if you don't read Road Racer X, I encourage you to check it out. It's a fantastic magazine. It comes out 8 times a year. It's chock full of just, you know, great pictures and things like that. It's a very, it's a slick, well-published magazine, and it's a little bit different than some of the road racing magazines that we get in the United States. You know, it's not kind of published by sort of a cranky eccentric in his basement, and it's also not, it's a little more sort of mainstream, shall we say. I'm not saying it's lightweight or anything like that. I mean, it's a fantastic magazine. It's got a lot of great content and everything, but it's more, the word for it is slick, and in a good way. And it's just, it's a great magazine. I like it a lot. Road Racer X, and check out their website at roadracerx.com. And incidentally, Chris is the author of a new book that has not quite yet come out. It's due out this month, a new biography on the Hayden brothers. And that's going to be coming out from Bull Publishing. So if you hadn't heard of that one, go to bullpublishing.com. It's called The Haydens. It has a subtitle about, you know, Nicky, Roger, and Tommy, brothers from Owensboro, something along those lines. You'll be able to find it under The Haydens. It's on Amazon.com, The Haydens as well. Like I said, hasn't come out yet. It's due out by the end of the month, and that's by Chris Johnham. So thanks a lot to Chris. Thanks a lot to Kevin Whitaker for his donation. Thanks a lot to all the people that posted links in the forums. Do appreciate it. And let's get on with a little bit of news. A few news items that happened in this past week, some interesting stuff, not all of it good. First of all, Miguel Duhamel, who, if you'll remember, substituted for the injured Tony Elias on the Gresini Honda at Laguna Seca. Miguel Duhamel was injured badly in a gnarly, as described at superbikeplanet.com, gnarly crash, turn 12 at Road Atlanta during testing for AMA. Apparently, he has a lacerated liver and a bruised and perforated lung. So he's currently in the hospital, said to be in good spirits, apparently never lost consciousness. However, these are pretty serious injuries, and it's not a good thing at all. And the chances of Miguel finishing out the AMA season are not all that great with those kind of injuries. So we wish him the best of luck, and we hope that he comes back as soon as he can, but that he doesn't push it on the other hand as well, because he doesn't want to make things worse. So sorry, Miguel. While we're talking about Miguel and Tony Elias and all that sort of stuff, Elias is scheduled to make a Brno return. Injured MotoGP star Tony Elias will make his race comeback at next weekend's Czech Republic Grand Prix. He broke his right leg in a crash during practice, if you remember, at the Dutch TT at Assen several weeks ago. And he has made a very, very rapid progress at recovering. So he had an operation and all of that on his leg, and he's now due to come back for Brno, which is surprises me. I didn't think he was going to be making it back for Brno after a broken femur. That's not a good thing. Of course, he's not completely recovered. He's going to be out there riding through the pain like these guys do. Now, this does mean that Gresini Honda is going to have two injured riders because Marco Melandri, if we recall, injured his ankle there at Laguna Seca, rode through the pain, had to be carried off the podium in a sort of superhero performance. Turns out that Marco had not just sort of hurt his ankle, he had broken it. And, he is also somewhat iffy for Brno. As of this is a little bit old news, a few days ago here from the MotoGP.com website, and he's one of three riders battling against the clock to be ready for next weekend's Grand Prix in the Czech Republic. He's nervously awaits the all clear to compete after having had a previously undetected broken ankle discovered upon returning to Europe. So we're hoping that Marco can also return there. However, that's going to put Gresini with two guys that have fairly significant injuries riding on there. It's going to be kind of the Jerry Kids team going on. Between them and Pramac Dantin, it's a fairly injury-filled year with basically Gresini covering the lower extremities and Pramac Dantin covering the hands. They only have 3 out of 4 hands fully operational because Hoffman, who, if you'll recall, broke his left wrist, had a compound fracture in his left hand there at Laguna Seca in the first free practice on Friday morning. He had a serious operation here in the United States with Dr. Ting. A lot of stitches, kind of Frankenstein looking. There's some photos on his website at alex66.com, and it's in German, but the pictures are, of course, in the universal language of pictures, and you can check them out. MotoGP.com will shortly have an update on Alex's chances of riding at Brno, and they mentioned that there's a possibility that Briton Chaz Davis, who, if you'll recall, rode for Alex in the Laguna Seca Grand Prix round, and they say that there's a possibility that he will be given another ride on the satellite Desmodici GP7. However, that has been since then ixnayed. So Chaz will not be making a comeback at Brno, and it's unclear right now whether or not Alex will. We might be hearing more about that in a little bit. And then, let's see, further news. This is kind of an interesting one. At least we're finally not talking about injuries. Rossi. Valentino Rossi is under investigation for tax fraud. Valentino Rossi lives in the United Kingdom. He lives in England because the primary reason that he's always said is that he simply cannot have a real life in Italy because he's simply too recognizable. And, you know, he can't even basically leave his house without sort of being mobbed by fans. So he lives in London where he has a little bit more of a real life sort of a thing where he can actually leave the house and only maybe 50% of the people will recognize him instead of 100%, that sort of thing. However, the Italian tax agency does not believe that's the case, or in any case, they are investigating former world motorcycling champion Valentino Rossi for suspected tax evasion. The agency says they are examining possible tax evasion on undeclared revenue of 60 million euros, which is 40.6 million pounds and probably somewhere about $70 million right now, from 2000 to 2004. The investigation is linked to Rossi's decision in 2000 to take up residence in Britain to take advantage of favorable tax conditions. And like I said, I'd always been under the understanding that it was largely because Rossi wanted a real life. So whatever, apparently the Italian tax authorities, their version of the IRS or whatever, does not believe so. Further news, Corona Beer, Grupo Modelo, owner of the Corona Extra Beer brand, has basically announced that they're going to quit sponsoring World Superbike. This is a press release from the World Superbike Organization. So FGS Sport would like to thank the Grupo Modelo, owner of the Corona Extra Beer brand, for its long-term involvement in the Superbike World Championship, and in particular for the last 3 years as the title sponsor of the series. The exit of Corona Extra from the championship has already generated a massive interest from several companies aiming to acquire the Superbike title sponsorship package for the 2008 and future seasons. So we hope so. We wish FGS Sport, the Flying Flamini Brothers, the best of luck in finding a title sponsor there, because they're going to need it. And it's always good to have lots of healthy sponsorship in our chosen motorsport, whether it be MotoGP, World Superbike, or a combination thereof. One thing also, this is somewhat news related, and I failed to mention it in the intro when I talked about Chris Johnham. He had an interview on MotoGP.com. So if you go to the MotoGP.com site, they have a series going on right now called Working in MotoGP, and they actually interviewed Liam Schubert, one of their early interviews. You can find it there. And they also did Chris Johnham. There's a lot of other good stuff too going on. It's really neat to be able to read about these guys that are working in MotoGP and are involved in the sport and have what many of us would regard as a dream job of being this close to the racing action and all of that good stuff. And that's going to cover it for the news for today. Let's move on. All right, this is sort of a technical item that had managed to fall through the cracks for a couple of weeks. Dom Perez sent me an email about this several weeks ago when I mentioned seeing on MotoGP.com a helmet removal quick release sort of system they had going on, the showy guys were doing, where they had these two snaps that pulled the cheek pads out of the helmet. You might recall that from a few episodes ago. And Dom Perez sent me an email where I says, hi Bob, you've mentioned the quick release cheek pads a couple of times. However, the AMA Supercross and Motocross now require a different device, but one that serves the same purpose. It's called Hats Off, and it's an inflatable bladder that the trackside medical team pumps up, and it pushes the helmet off of the top of the head rather than pulling against the spine. And you can check it on the website at hatsoffusa.com, which of course I did. So I went to Hats Off USA, and yes, it is actually worn and required in AMA motocross and supercross. And also in the IRL series now, apparently. So it's kind of a neat thing, basically. What happens is you put this bladder, sort of an inflatable bladder, inside your helmet. And then there's a small pipe that comes poking out down through the bottom of the helmet and a little rubber pump-up bulb kind of thing. And if you're ever injured, because we all know that the last thing you want to do to an injured motorcyclist or a downed motorcyclist that you suspect has an injury, you do not want to just yank his helmet off, because you might cause a serious spinal injury from something that, you know, may have not been quite so minor. So you have to be careful taking that helmet off. And this is kind of a neat device. You just basically put this little bag inside the helmet, and where the helmet lining is permanently attached to the inner shell of the helmet. Hats Off may be fitted over the lining and covered with a crown pad, as shown in diagram 1B. I'm reading off the website, if you can't tell. And basically, yada doodle, this inflatable bag goes inside your helmet, and you have this pump up squeeze bulb. And then there's a sticker that you put on the outside of the helmet that says, hey, I'm wearing this Hats Off, so don't just yank my helmet off. And I think that's a good thing, and kind of another way to take care of the whole, how do we get this guy's helmet off sort of a thing. So if you're interested in that, take a look. It's Hats Off USA. It's all one word, Hats Off USA. .com, and they have information about their helmet removal system there. And thank you very much, Dom Perez. I do appreciate the link. All right, like I said in the intro, Jules Cheesick was hanging out with Liam Schubert a little bit over the past couple of days, and here is a recording that Jules did with Liam and a friend of theirs, Jay Wright, and they were hanging out in a bar. There's kind of a bit of background noise going on. You can hear Liam real well, though, and it's really worth listening to. Liam's always just this, like, fountain of cool information and tidbits and all sorts of insider stuff that is really hard to get. So it's a good interview. It's not really so much an interview, it's just a kind of a chat. So it was recorded live on location by Jules Cheesick, and here we go. Let's give that a listen.
Hey everybody out in MotoGPOD land. We're sitting at the Hemlock Tavern on Polk Street in San Francisco between Sutter and Post. It's a nice quiet little bar, usually with live music on the inside. There's an outdoor smoking area, and we're just sitting around talking about bikes on my last night before I ship out back to Europe. And then a few days after that, I'll be at the Czech Republic for the Brno race. It's Jules, myself, and my friend Jay Wright. Jay's an avid Ducati track enthusiast and street rider, and has a super motard, Honda 650, and a beautiful ZB50, which is undergoing massive changes in the near future, and a beautiful fiance named Amy, and a great dog named Digger. And Jay's just an all-around great guy. So we're joined with Jay. We have the triumvirate of evil here at the Hemlock.
How's California this time around?
As much as I wanted it to be peaceful, it was hectic as always. I seems like I always manage to schedule at least one or two appointments a day, and I spent a bunch of time commuting, and Ducati Factory, Ducati North America, was kind enough to loan me a bike, and after that got knocked over while it was parked on the street, they were kind enough to loan me a 999S. So once I got a 999S under me, then I just spent the rest of my vacation riding most of the time. It's fantastic. Really allowed me to reconnect with the time that you don't realize you lose when you're not riding motorcycles. You know, you get off a bike and you think, oh, I really miss hitting the corners, or I really miss, you know, letting it rip and just cutting through traffic. But what I really missed was the solitude of just getting on a bike and going and not talking to anybody for an hour and a half, or longer.
Your tunes?
Yeah, just listening to my music and zoning out, and it's a hell of a lot easier than riding a bicycle. And that motor, that's so beautiful in that bike. It's just a really fun ride that once you got up to a decent speed, just handled like a dream. So I really enjoyed riding around and visiting with old friends. I saw some of my old friends flew out from high school from Hawaii, and I connected and rode with some other people that I'd met through the internet and through my website and so on. Well, some MotoGPOD listeners, to send this out to Brent in New Jersey. He's a MotoGPOD listener that I met at Laguna Seca, and we partied on Sunday night after the race. Really great guy, him and his brother. So that was a fun time. Special shout out to him.
How did you guys feel after the race was over, the team?
You know, I think we all felt it was kind of anticlimactic because we've been racing for so many weeks, and this was like the last one before our break. But on one level, we wanted it just to be done so we could get to our break. And I think mostly because our riders came into the race injured. I mean, in the pre-practice one, both our riders had hand injuries. And then when the Hoff got so badly injured in pre-practice one, a lot of the wind got kind of taken out of the sails. It was like, okay, we got a replacement rider. We can't have expectations on him. We wanted to be able to pin some hope on Barros because he's raced at Laguna before and he's done well before and he's just so experienced. But with his hand injury from the previous week of the previous race in Sachsenring, we couldn't expect too much. And I think also there was this huge build-up. We wanted to see if Hayden would kind of come back because, you know, as much as we might not be rooting actively for other team members, you know, other teams and other riders, we do want to see everybody, you know, ride to their potential. And we love it when somebody throws in, like, a surprising ride, just like, wow, it did really good, wow, you know, and it's what we talk about in the paddock. And to see Hopkins and Hayden collide and take each other down.
First lap, first real corner.
Yeah, turn two. That was just like, well, then for sure Stoner's just going to bomb away with it.
Yeah.
And he did. I mean, he decimated the field. He's got a lot to be proud about with that win.
The Tozer announcement took everybody by surprise.
Especially me. I did not expect that at all. I know a few of the guys on Tech Squad, and their data guy, who will probably work with Toslin, used to work with James Ellison with the Tech 3 team and then previously with WCM. So he told me quite a bit about their infrastructure and what their team is like. And it's surprising how many ideas and solutions have actually come out of the Tech 3 team and worked their way onto the factory bikes for Yamaha. They have a pretty clear channel of communication, and it's obvious when they don't have the same material as the factory squad. I mean, that was pretty obvious last year. But when they were going through the chatter problems in early 2005, some of the members of Tech 3, you know, modified their bikes, and then the factory took those ideas and went with it, just as a, you know, an attempt to find solutions. So they're a strong crew. They have a beautiful workshop in France. Apparently they've got all kinds of toys and, you know, jet skis and quads and, you know, just really bizarre, fun stuff. People use it as like a personal play shop when they have time.
So is there a competition between the two teams because they're on different tires?
No, not really. I mean, you can't honestly say that there is a contest between Dunlop and anybody at this point. It's an achievement when they beat other teams. Because Dunlop's still not at the level. But when you look at the advances they made this year alone, where they were 4 seconds behind in 2006, they're 2 seconds behind now. So they've halved their distance. And, you know, granted, with the 800s and the electronics, everybody has closed the gap. you know, and everything's a lot tighter this year. But Dunlop's really made some good advances. And especially after Le Mans, it seemed like they had some better material. And at Laguna, they always seem to do well, maybe because of the AMA data that they have. But yeah.
Is there going to be a Dunlop team next year, though?
I haven't heard anything about whether or not they're going to be here or not. The speculation right now in the paddock seems to be which Yamaha team will be Bridgestone mounted and which one will be Michelin mounted. And then
there's
going to
be a Bridgestone Yamaha team.
Oh, I can't say for sure. Obviously not. But that's a speculation. It's a hot topic right now that, you know, people on all the teams are like, oh, I wonder if that's going to happen.
I mean, I think everybody assumes that Tolson would not go onto the team if they were going to be on Dunlop tires. So we have to assume that they're going to be on Michelin or something.
Yeah. If it's on Michelin, then it would really provide a lot of data for Yamaha and for Michelin to have four bikes running the same material. And it would follow exactly in line with what Ducati did with my team. To run us on the same hardware with the same tires, and therefore the data all be transferred between rider and bike. The factory can use all of it. However, there's a growing sentiment that one of the Yamaha squads will run Bridgestone, just to give Bridgestone an idea of what the Yamaha runs like, and also to give Yamaha a chance to see how they would do with Bridgestone tires.
Closing the gap with the other two manufacturers being caused by their not suffering from the same tire allocation rules that the other two manufacturers are?
That's a tricky question. I think mostly the tire allocation rules don't affect Dunlop as much because naturally they can bring more tires if they want. It's just that Dunlop is providing for one team alone, and how many tires are they going to bring for one race? I mean, are they honestly going to bring 20 different rear tires to try out in just a few hours of pre-practice and then a race? No, I think they're going to bring a smaller number of tires, say maybe five or six different types, and say, okay, you got two of these, three of these, and three of these, and that's what we think is going to work at this track.
Now, those tire rules, do they also apply to Dunlop in terms of, like, when do they have to choose their tires? Do they have to have their choices on Thursday?
I don't think so, because they don't have a number.
They don't have to choose.
There's no barcode. I haven't seen a barcode reader there. I think it's pretty much they show up and say, this is what we got. Nobody really looks too closely. We just want them to get on the pace, you know. The more manufacturers, the more everybody gets in the mix, the better it is for the health of the series. I mean, is this the first year we can remember where we're seeing five different colors of bikes in the top five consistently? You know, you've got a red bike, you've got a yellow bike, you've got, you know, blue bike. Yeah, yeah, you've got green bikes and blue bikes, which is that. For me, it's really fun to see. You know, because those guys have been chomping at the bit, and it just didn't really happen. And now Kawasaki seems to have hit the nail on the head, and Suzuki's right there. And the riders are hungry.
What's going to happen to Edwards, you think?
I think Edwards has a really good relationship with Michelin.
But we had that conversation with him, and
he does have a great relationship with Rossi.
Yep.
But I really see Yamaha grooming Lorenzo to be the next step after Rossi. And that makes sense purely because Ducati has locked in Stoner, who's a proven talent.
Yep.
Honda has locked in Pedrosa, who's a proven talent. And the next up-and-coming monster talent is Lorenzo. So it only made sense for Yamaha to do whatever it took to get him. And I can see them trying to get him to learn from the best. At that point, it becomes an interesting question whether or not Rossi will take kindly to someone learning his trick.
So you're leaving tomorrow and you're going back to Barcelona. How much time do you have in Barcelona before you hit Brno?
I leave on Thursday. I'm going to arrive Friday night after bouncing through Frankfurt. Then I will be there Saturday, Sunday. Saturday is a sleeping day for me, most likely. Sunday is kind of a recuperation day, and everything in Barcelona is closed except the pizza place that I will bicycle to. Monday is the final preparation, and I think Tuesday I'll head to Czech Republic. Probably fly into Prague and then maybe drive down. I think that's the game plan.
So let's talk about these substituted riders. We had a very fast substitution that happened in Laguna Seca. There was some talk or some releases, press releases about Alex Hoffman this morning saying that he might possibly make it back, but it just seems insane that he's still, his arm's in a sling and he's talking about riding in 10 days.
If that's not going to happen, you guys have any idea who's going to ride?
It's probably going to be one of two riders that Hoffman can't ride. It would be the Spanish rider, Ivan Silva, who races in the Formula Extreme in the National Series in Spain, who's ridden for Dantin in previous years, or it will be Chaz Davies once again.
Really, he's going to fly out to the race?
You know, he'd have to miss an AMA race, but, you know, with the way his luck's been going, it might be good for him to skip an AMA race and not take a DNF. Sorry, guys. I can't believe how many engines and things the kid seems to go through. I don't know if he's riding in the engine like a two-stroke and just like holding it at max RPM or what. I don't know what it is.
What's the rest of the team doing right now? Where are they?
At the beach. I mean, no, the guys at Corsa are working. I obviously get emails from them, but I know my chief mechanic was up in Switzerland hanging out with Hoff and doing some bicycling, mountain bike, and a couple of the other guys went on special mountain biking trips. One of the data guys went up to Whistler after Laguna Seca to go mountain biking up there. I mean, the guys are wild. I can't believe they risk injury like that, but what the heck?
Are riders doing that?
No, riders train no matter what.
Yeah.
They can either train with a mountain bike or they can train with a motocross bike or whatever.
Certainly a physical injury could be just as serious for a mechanic as it would be for a rider.
Absolutely, because we run such a small crew, you know, everybody on the team is essential at this point. And if one of the guys was to break a wrist or lose a finger, you know, that seriously impacts the speed at which we can do things to the bike. And we did work with a mechanic with a broken arm this year. One of my guys, fifth year, tapped out on his 450 and had a big wreck and broke his arm and worked through it with a cast.
Wow.
You know, would take like latex rubber gloves and put it over the cast section of his hand and, you know, obviously got help for doing the bigger stuff, but he was right in there working away. And after a couple of races, they got strong enough. I loaned him one of my wrist braces from when I broke my wrist in 2004, and he used that for a few races. So it can be done. It's just pretty unusual.
What does he work on?
He's the number one mechanic on Alex Hoffman's bike. Let's do a tiny recap on all the teams this year, because even though we are 11 races in, this is the midpoint of the season in everyone's mind, because we are obviously having the summer break. So we'll start off with the championship points leader, the manufacturer's leader, and the team leader. We'll start with Barbara Ducati. From my perspective, the pasta makers have hit a home run in the first half of the season. They couldn't have asked for more from Casey Stoner. Bridgestone has not really let them down at all. I mean, they've been able to fight at racetracks where, you know, they had no chance last year. And this year, on the smaller bike, with less, you know, data, testing information, you know, it's a slam dunk all the way around. The bike has held up in all the races. The rider has kept it up on both wheels in Casey's case. The only sore spot, I would say, right now for Maru Ducati has been Loris's results, which haven't exactly been consistent. And this is something that the factory has tried very hard to help him with. You know, there was a small blurb about him getting a different spec engine a few races ago. And people kind of glossed over it after a day or two of digesting the information. You have to understand, for a small factory to create a different engine spec, it's not that they're changing the map or they're changing just the camshaft. So many internal components have to be modified to run that engine, that it's a big expense and it's a big engineering challenge. And it really showed me that the factory was trying to do everything they could to get him the feeling that he wanted to get out of the bike. So, unfortunately, that didn't translate into great results so far. But, you know, Caparossi seems to be perennial. All of a sudden, he can just get on his day and you know, stomp everybody like at Motegi last year. So, overall, Barbaro Ducati, 10 out of 10 so far in this part of the season.
The Italian press is saying a lot of things about Loris leaving.
True.
And there's a lot of speculation about him going to Suzuki or Kawasaki. Very interesting. I always identified him with the Ducati team because he was there right from the beginning. He seemed like he was the guy who helped develop the machine. And that's what he's saying now. He's saying
I made this bike that Stoner's winning on?
Yeah.
In fact, the Italian press reported today that Loris felt betrayed by Ducati.
Yeah. All I can really say about that is he asked me to help him find a car in the United States. And when I asked him what color he wanted, he said any color but red.
Oh. So did he ask for a blue bike? I mean, a blue car or a green car?
Any color but red. Could have been yellow for all I know. No. You know, Lawrence is a really great guy to talk to because it's really personable away from kind of the media constraints and when there's a crush of people. We joke around quite a bit, and he's a really funny guy, and most people don't know this, but he's got a collection of old race Ferraris in Monaco. I mean, just really bizarre, exotic red cars. He's a real enthusiast. I mean, no, I don't. You never paint a Ferrari. It comes like that. That is the color, and that's that.
Let's go down the line.
Okay. Second place, obviously, it's going to be Yamaha. What is it, Fiat Yamaha? I swear, every time I look at the logo, I think F-I-R-T. Fert Yamaha. Fiat Yamaha, really also fantastic handling machine. The most agile and beautiful bike to watch transitioning. I love watching that thing get on the brakes and duck under people and move around. And you know, you can't ever argue against Rossi. So on an underpowered machine, relatively speaking, and on tires that aren't or haven't been as consistent as the Bridgestone Crush this year, their team's getting a 9 out of 10.
Well, what's interesting about the Yamaha team, the Yamaha bike, is that the sound of it is very different than the other 800s. Like, I knew that they were coming, like, I was taking photos up at the Corkscrew, and I didn't have to look. I knew that it was going to be either Edwards or Ross coming down.
Hmm. They're the only bike running a silencer on the grid right now.
Well, besides the Dunlop ones. But yeah, they run that little Termignomi. But I'm not really sure why their bike sounds exactly like that.
I chalked it up to the silencer, I don't know.
I do too.
Is it a Big Bang motor?
Yeah. One speed.
Okay, we're going to go with Jay's assessment. I don't talk about things like that anymore.
All right. Third place.
Yeah, it is. Even the new one's going to be like that. The one that I heard in Le Mans. Okay.
Third place.
Suzuki, definitely.
Yeah?
Yeah, race win, podiums, come on. We got podiums by both their riders. We've got them seriously chomping within the top five on a fairly regular basis. I mean, how many top fives has Hopkins strung together? John's really on a tear. And, you know, everyone talks about how cute his girlfriend is, or fiance at this point. She's so hot. The fact of the matter is, the same way that Casey Stoner's wife has kind of calmed him down and allowed him to get on with his job, and he's obviously happy about his relationship, I think the same thing is undergoing, you know, John's undergoing the same thing. He's happy with his girl, no distractions, and now he's really up there. You know, he's definitely a contender
right now in the championship.
That's right.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah. I was really happy to see Vermeulen get on the box at Laguna. I think he really deserved something last year,
yeah.
And this year it came around. So, great kid, and they rank number 3 right now, 8 out of 10.
All right.
Fourth team.
What about that Pedrosa guy?
Yeah, we're going to have to go with HRC, Repsol Honda. Definitely making strides. I don't really care who gets the parts first, as long as both guys ride to their potential and push that machine. And we're seeing Hayden make a comeback. Obviously, he had a bad race at Laguna, and in 18 races, you can have a bad race. And he's had more than one bad race so far this season. I'm not going to hold anything against him personally because I know his work ethic and I know how hard he works and really goes for it. And the same thing goes for Pedrosa. The guy's a machine. He goes out there, and they're really trying hard. I mean, obviously, they expected to have probably the dominant machine when the 800s came out, and that wasn't the case. And we're really going to see what they can come up with at Bruneau. Because I think rather than just throw parts at this bike, I'm really curious to see what their evolution model is going to be that they're promising for Bruneau. So, HRC, 7 out of 10.
All right.
Hmm. Next team.
This one's going to be trickier.
Okay. We're going to go with Grassini.
Yeah.
We're going to go with Grassini.
Unfortunately, lost one of their riders.
Lost Tony. But Melandri, is, despite ups and downs, has been doing great. I mean, he's obviously pushing a machine on Bridgestones. It's his first year on Bridgestones. And Tony is obviously getting used to the Bridgestones and the 800s, and his riding style has been modified, and they're, you know, trying to adapt to both riders. Bridgestone's working hard because both their styles are so different. They require different tires. But those guys are working well this year. And, you know, you saw such a powerful performance by Marco at Laguna. I think it just shows that the team is solid. The riders are solid. So, 6 out of 10.
There's some, you know, he's hurt, Melandri.
Obviously, yeah.
I mean, and
but now he's boosted because he's going to the factory team next year with Marlboro Ducati.
That's right, that's right.
That was kind of a shock announcement.
But I think with the Grassini squad, I think the big highlight was that the first quarter of the season it was Tony.
Yeah.
And the second quarter it was Melandri. And between the two, they've definitely built a formidable squad, but...
The problem with Melandri is he's been so unbelievably inconsistent.
Well, that's traditional. That's traditional Melandri. Throughout Melandri's career, right?
This is true.
Yeah.
But the first half of the season he was complaining about equipment. But something about Elias' style and maybe the Bridgestones, they really came together.
And he was wild and beautiful.
He was wild and beautiful, and he was getting the results. And then I guess HRC made enough progress that... by the second quarter of the season, he was the man on top, and Elias was conveniently injured. So.
Yeah, or it's that when you stop getting beaten by your teammate, you're able to do better. That's also a possibility. No, I'm going to, you know what, I'm going to agree with you. I will put Kawasaki up higher rather than Grassini. We should slot Kawasaki in there and make them level almost, not quite on the level of Suzuki, but definitely they've blown expectations out of the water.
Absolutely.
I think they've got the second best bike on the grid.
Yeah, if not the first best, just waiting for the rider. And that's why I wouldn't initially think about them. I know what the bike's capable of. It is fast. It is strong. I mean, it works. Works great with the tires. But how many races did Depinay finish this year? And that's really their main drawback. If he's going to be their lead guy, you can't crash out of so many races. I remember when he came in fifth, he was qualified second on the grid at Catalunya. He was given very specific instructions. Hey, we don't care, but the bike crosses the finish line, you know, and he kept pulling in for a fifth, his best result in his career in MotoGP. So Kawasaki definitely exceeding expectations and working well in the wet under Anthony West. I think that was a ballsy move of them to go with West. It cost him a little money to buy out of the Yamaha contract he had in World Superstock, but great choice because they've cut their bases covered as far as wet races and then in the dry. And I only see West getting stronger to being a consistent top 10 guy. You know, 8 through 10, easy. Guy's got a lot of potential, and who knows how far he can go. I would put them even field with Grassini, or slightly higher for beating expectations. Because Grassini, you got to remember, out of the last 4 years, they've
been the most improved.
Oh, definitely. Definitely, most improved.
Well, what about that red and white team?
I'm going to rate us at 6th. Or possibly 7th. If you count, you know, two teams tying for 5th, then the next one should be 7th, no?
Yeah.
And that would be my team. And I'm going to rate us a little bit lower than I would like to because I know what our potential is. And if we don't achieve what I think we're capable of, then I'm disappointed. And we were plagued by injury a little bit in the last couple of races. And I think we had some opportunities that we could have capitalized on earlier in the year because I know how good the bike is and I know that the tires work. So I'm going to rate us at 7. You know, just...
How many points out of 10?
Oh, let's see. That would be 5 out of 10.
Ooh.
Yeah, 5 out of 10. Where it's a lot better than 1 out of 10 last year. You know, glass half full, 5 out of 10. It's half full, half empty. Next, behind us, I'm going to say...
We got LCR, we got Konica, we got...
Tecfois, and Kenny Roberts.
And Kenny Roberts, which we'll wait till the end.
Jay, you want to say something? Okay. I think we're going to go with Carlos Checa next, because basically the LCR team is great. Fancata, the chief mechanic, has a lot of experience. Worked with Antonio Covas, who developed like twin spar frames. I mean, the guy was a genius, a Spanish genius, to the point of designing his own three-cylinder GP four-stroke machine. I've seen the plans for it, you know, photos in one of the Spanish magazines. The guy was a really forward thinker. I mean, it was a chassis-less design, lots of carbon fiber. Engine, swing arm, and front end stuck to it. Radical concept bike. We are going to go with Carlos ahead of ahead of Konica Minolta, because he's really riding on the edge, and he's crashing quite a bit, but he's got a very small window to work with. The Honda engine seems to blow up when it goes 500 RPM more, or not work very well, or very fast when it's 500 RPM lower. So we're going to give him props for just keeping going out, because he throws surprising lap times in occasionally, and you're like, whoa, where did Checa come from, you know? Looking consistent through practice, but not able to convert in the race.
He was looking great in the dry in Le Mans.
That he was. 4 out of 10.
Okay.
3 out of 10, Tech 3.
Going to skip Konica?
Oh, no. I don't think they're at the level that Tech 3 is at.
I agree.
So, Tech 3, beautiful riding by Gintoli. He's really showing that he wants to be in this series. I mean, he's definitely not on the best equipment, not on the best tires, but he's riding his heart out. And nothing like Le Mans showed that. I mean, when you're on a bike that's at that level and you push through the field and you get in the front and you pass Rossi and you're leading your home race on that material, that gets monster points. So Tech 3, a lot of points for Gintoli, and really hoping Dunlop continues to improve. I would like to see them in the top 10 more often, because it's nice to see their colors.
I like seeing the fact that even though he had a really bad get-off at Le Mans, he got back on and finished the race.
Yeah. Twice, didn't he? Didn't he go down twice? Yeah. Anyway, after that, I will say Kenny Roberts' team.
Really?
Yeah, because obviously they're not getting the same level of material that a big team like HRC, Repsol, can provide. You know, they've always been the little guy fighting the big dog. And Curtis is excited to ride. Curtis got some points. And
yeah, he has more points than Kenny.
Yeah, definitely. Well, they're almost on even races at this point now, right? Well, actually, it only took Curtis one race to get more points than Kenny had the first couple. But
that,
yeah.
That was that wet race and they fell off.
Yeah.
Still.
But that means he didn't.
Right.
So,
right.
Just, points for the senior team. And I just like partying with Curtis because he's so brutal to his mechanics. I mean, he's definitely a Roberts.
Oh, yeah.
And the way he treats his guys, I mean, it's out of love, but it sounds really harsh if you're kind of an outsider just listening for the first time, because I was shocked the first time, and then I was like, oh, this is how it is. He's a Roberts. Last, I'm going to have to go with Konica Minolta. They will get 1 point. Obviously, Tech 3 will get 3 out of 10.
Is it the team or is it the rider? I mean, Senior is... did some amazing stuff in the Kawasaki in the past years. He just seems like a
super
very
genius.
Talented guy.
I would still rate him, or last year I still would have rated him one of the top five talents in MotoGP. Just his bike control and skill, and I really like watching his style. But he has not gelled, I think, with the package. And
do you think it's a switch from the Bridgestone to the Michelin that's hurting him the most?
I do. And Jay brought this up to me 2 weeks ago. He said, so it's looking like you can switch from Michelin to Bridgestone to do better, but you can't switch from Michelin to Bridgestone.
Certainly Tamada proved it.
Oh, no, wait. I just said that reverse. You can switch from Bridgestone to Michelin and do worse,
right,
or you can switch from Michelin to Bridgestone and do better.
Right.
And most people don't realize the level of feel that these guys have. It looks so smooth on TV because it's happening so fast, but you don't realize how much they're drifting the front tire and the bike going into a turn while they're trail braking. And then as the front tire gains its traction, they're still trail braking right to the apex before they screw it on. So front tire feel is immense. And I don't think Super Shinya's got it with the package he's got right now.
Do you think he's going to be on the team next year?
Yeah, it's likely that he will be somewhere. I'm not sure if he'll be with Konica Minolta. It is very important, I think, to have a Japanese rider in the series, because so much of the material and so much of the influence in the series comes from Japan. I mean, let's face it, they build most of the hardware that's on the grid.
Yeah.
So I would love to see Hiro step up, Aoyama.
Yeah.
I'm sure Takahashi's gotten, you know, a few nibbles here and there. They need the next generation of Japanese riders if Tamada goes out. And it really depends if Shinya's going to be motivated after this year. Because rider confidence is still the most important part of the equation. All right, as I chug this last beer, I just want to say thanks, everybody, for continuing to listen to MotoGPOD, visiting my website, MotoLiam.com. I'll be back up with updates as soon as I get back into Europe and that mode of life. And it's just been great. I really enjoyed meeting everybody at Laguna Seca, and I enjoy meeting people at every race. So if you get a chance, drop by, say hi, and who knows, keep your eye on the races.
Thanks, Jules. Liam. Thanks, Liam. Take care.
Thanks.
Thank you to Jules for recording that. Thank you for Liam and Jay Wright there for participating in the whole conversation. Like I said, it's good stuff. Liam always gives us great, great information. And we're going to have Liam here on the show again real, real soon. We're looking forward to that. And until then, we wish him the best of luck, and him and the whole team the best of luck at Brno. And I'm sure we'll be talking to him before too long. And that's going to do it for today's show. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you liked it a lot. The conversation with Liam, like I said, was super, super interesting stuff. The bar noise there going on made it a little hard to listen to, but it was well worth sticking through it, and I'm glad you did. And as a little reward for listening to the entire show, I'm going to send out a reminder. If you have not yet entered the contest to win the really cool Eddie Lawson posters that were by Hector Cadamatore, I have six of these Eddie Lawson posters. It's a print of an original artwork done by Hector Cadamatore. They were donated to MotoGPOD by Mark Callan, who you can see his website at markcallan.com. And these are really cool things. We're giving away six of them. All you got to do is send an email to contest@motogpod.com, and in that email, put the answer to this small and easy trivia question: how many race wins did Yamaha have in the MotoGP series in 2006? I've gotten a lot of contest entries so far, but since we're giving away six of them, your chances are still good, because a lot in podcast terms means, like, you know, 60. So you can still get your email entry in. I encourage you to do so. Just send me an email, contest@motogpod.com. How many race wins did Yamaha have in 2006? Easy, easy question in the MotoGP class, by the way. How many race wins in MotoGP did Yamaha have in 2006? contest@motogpod.com. Send me that. Put your name in the drawings there for that. We're going to pick out six names randomly from all the correct answers, and I'm going to announce the winners in next week's show, and we will pick up the postage here at MotoGPOD, and we will mail out this poster, which, like I said in the last show, it's a very, very cool poster. Thanks again to Mark for donating those, and thanks again to all of you so far that have participated. It's really cool to see the level. You know, I basically, are you guys listening out there? And yes, definitely people are. I'm getting a lot of emails and a lot of cool feedback, so thanks a lot for all of that. And speaking of cool feedback, I have a small favor of you to ask, or a small favor to ask of you, depending upon how you want to speak your English. At iTunes, they have a, you know, review this podcast thing kind of stuff going on. And our primary listenership is from iTunes. That's still where I get most of the downloads, is coming through iTunes. And, you know, I've always had good luck with it. We get good placement in iTunes. Our popularity and the little iTunes popularity thing is great. But I don't have a lot of these reviews. There's like eight up there, and I appreciate the eight that I've got so far. You know, it's great. But I'm going to ask you to go up there. Please put a review. Put an honest review. If you think the show sucks, say the show sucks. If you think the show's great, say the show's great. I'd just like to see some more of these reviews going on, just because I'm kind of curious of how other shows are getting their placement in the featured section of iTunes and all that sort of thing going on. And I think the reviews might have something to do with it. So I'm actually going to put another link in the show notes, episode 90 show notes, right there at the top of the page of MotoGPOD.com. It'll be a direct link to the iTunes thing. Or if you just happen to be in iTunes, maybe you're downloading the free song from the week, or buying a song, or getting the podcast, or whatever, go to the podcast directory, go to where they have the MotoGPOD listing, and there's a thing where you can put a little review in there. And I encourage you to do that, and thank you very much in advance for doing so. And until then, don't forget to send your entries into contest@motogpod.com, and keep on listening. Don't forget, we got Brno coming up next weekend. We're going to have a Brno pre-race show before that show, but you never want to leave it till the last minute. And I think that about covers it. So we will talk to you next week. And in between now and then, keep the rubber side down, and happy riding. I know that nobody actually listens to these stupid disclaimers because it's at the end of the show and it's kind of boring and who wants to hear this, but I feel compelled to say that MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL, and the MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL, and all other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them.